ich die paar Pommes habe ich auf Teil aus der Zeit gefragt. Ich mir dachte, wenn ich das so nehme, dann habe ich ein paar Pommes sicher. Ich habe ein bisschen paar Pommes habe ich auf der Zeit aus der Zeit gefragt. Ich mir dachte, wenn ich die ganze Zeit aus der Zeit gefragt habe. Dann habe ich ein paar All glory to some of the devotees. All glory to some of the devotees. All glory to some of the devotees. All glory to some of the Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the 11th canto, chapter 2, Marjanimi meets the nine Yogendras, text 43. Itya chutangrim bhajato nivritya. What? It's 43. It's supposed to be verse 43. Don't tell me I did the wrong verse. Okay. 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 Itya chuta grim bhajato nivritya. Bhakti virakti bhagavat prabodha. Bhavanti vai bhagavatasya rajam. Tathapadam shantin upaiti sakshat. Itya chutan grim bhajato nivritya. Bhakti virakti bhagavat prabodha. Bhavanti vai bhagavatasya rajam. Tata param shantin upaiti sakshat. Itya chutan grim bhajato nivritya. Bhaktir viraktir bhagavat prabodha. Bhavanti vai bhagavatasya bhajam. Tata param shantim upaiti sakshat. Itya chutan grim bhajato nivritya. Bhakti virakti bhagavat prabodha. Bhavanti vai bhagavatasya vacham. Tata param shantim upaiti sakshat. Itya chutan grim bhajato nivritya. Bhakti virakti bhagavat prabodha. Bhavanti vai bhagavatasya rajam. Tata param shantim upaiti sakshat. Ya chitam grim bhajato nivritya. Bhakti virakti bhagavat prabodha. Bhavanti vai bhagavatasya vacham. Ladies? Vichya chitam rimbajato nivichya Bhakti virakti bhagavat prabodha Bhavanti vadagavasasya vajam Satyaparam santam upaiti sakshat Vidya chitam rimbajato nivitya Bhakti virakti bhagavat prabodha Bhavanti vaibhagavatasya vajans Tataparam santam upaiti sakshat Iti Thus, Achyuta of the Infallible Supreme Lord, Angrim, the feet, Bhajata, for one who is worshipping, Anuvritya, by constant practice, Bhakti, devotion, Virakti, detachment, Bhagavat Prabodha, knowledge of the personality of Godhead. Bhavanti, they manifest. By, indeed. Bhagavatatya, for the devotee. Rajan, O King Nimi. Tata, then. Padam Shantim, supreme peace. Upaiti, he attained. Sakshat, directly. Translation by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. My dear King, the devotee who worships the lotus feet of the infallible personality of Godhead with constant endeavor thus achieves unflinching devotion, detachment, and experienced knowledge of the personality of Godhead. In this way, the successful devotee of the Lord achieves supreme spiritual peace. My dear King, the devotee who worships the lotus feet of the infallible personality of Godhead with constant endeavor thus achieves unflinching devotion, detachment, and experienced knowledge of the personality of Godhead. In this way, the successful devotee of the Lord achieves supreme spiritual peace. Purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 271, Vahaya kaman yasaravan kumanschati nishpriha nirmamo nirahankara sashantimadhigachati. A person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship, and who is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. Srila Prabhupada comments, to become desireless means not to desire anything for sense gratification. In other words, desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actually desirelessness. There is a similar statement in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in Madhya 19.149. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Atae Vashanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakaliya Shanta. Because the devotee of Lord Krishna is desireless, he is peaceful. Fruit of workers desire material enjoyment, jnanis desire liberation, and yogis desire material opulence. Therefore, they are all lusty and cannot be peaceful. Generally, there are three classes of living entities afflicted with selfish desire. These are the bhukti-kami, mukti-kami, and siddhi-kami. Bhukti-kami refers to those ordinary persons who desire money and everything money can buy, So that makes up a good part of our population. Not devotee population, but the general population. Such a primitive mentality is based on the desire to enjoy money, sex, and social prestige. When a living being becomes frustrated with this hallucination, he takes to the path of speculative philosophy and analytically tries to track down the source of illusion. Such a person is called muktikami because he desires to negate material illusion and merge into an impersonal spiritual state free from anxiety. I was just reading a conversation where Srila Prabhupada was comparing this situation of someone who is suffering in the material world, and so they decide they want to merge, you know, they want to emerge into the personal Brahman. So Srila Prabhupada said, just if you have a fever and someone comes and cuts your throat, and so your fever's gone, it's finished, but so are you. But and so that's the situation with merging, and with the impersonal philosophy is actually, it's spiritual suicide. So, but this is when people become too frustrated with the bhukti kami, with just getting money and buying, and they come to an end, they're frustrated. Many times this is the next step for them. Such a person is called mukti kami because he desires to negate material illusion and merge into an impersonal spiritual state free from anxiety. The mukti kami is also motivated by personal desire, although the desire is somewhat more advanced. Similarly, the siddhi kami, or the mystic yogi, who desires the spectacular powers of mystic yoga, such as reaching one's hand across the world, or making oneself smaller than the smallest, or lighter than the lightest, is also infected by material or selfish desire. And Srila Prabhupada comments, you know, really at length on some of these mystic cities and how people use them and how many of them can be compared to what scientists do today. Like the mystic city of Anima is becoming smaller than the smallest. And Prabhupada gives an example of a Trilinga Swami in India who's walking in the street naked, and the police come and they arrest him for indecent exposure, even in India. So they put him in jail. But Srila Prabhupada explains that with Anima City, if there's even a little hole anywhere, like a vent, anything, the mystic yogi, the mystic city, he can make himself so small, he can actually come out of that hole. And that's what happened with this Trilinga Swami. The next day, they found him walking around again. And, of course, the people were like, wow, you know, they adored him more than ever. And the policemen decided to kind of stay away because they were a little afraid of him at that point, that he was so powerful. But at the same time, Prabhupada makes the point also that modern scientists, they're also able to enter into stone through their excavation, you know, making subways and penetrating hills. So in many ways, the scientists have done comparable work in perfecting some of the mystic cities. Also, lagima, the ability to float on the air and float in the water. Prabhupada compares this to people, you know, just taking a boat or a passenger plane that flies 500 people all over the world. But he also gives an example of a young boy in a village. And the young boy decides to go off with the yogis and learn a mystic city. So he goes, and he's gone for several years. And he finally comes back to the village. And people, oh, where have you been? You know, we've been gone for so long. He goes, well, I've become a yogi, and I've learned to perfect this, a mystic city, and I can walk on water. And the villagers are so impressed, like, wow, you can walk on water. Please show us, you know, how you do this. So the young boy proceeds to walk across the water, and everyone's very, wow, that's incredible that you learned that. But an old man sitting in the back, he speaks up and he goes, so you've learned a 2-cent talent. I can pay the boatman 2 cents. You can take me across the water. And you spent 7 years learning how to perfect this yogic city to walk across the water. So Prabhupada shows how, you know, even though they've perfected these arts, many times they're not so important. And we have to look behind the purpose for people learning these desires. Another one is prapti. And with prapti, somehow or other, by traveling on a sunbeam or a moonbeam, you can connect with it and reach anywhere you want in the world. You can just think of it and go there and get what you want. So Srila Prabhupada had personal experience where a yogi came to his house, and he was explaining how he had this power. And so someone at Prabhupada's house said, "Well, can you get us some mangoes from Kabul?" The yogi said, "Sure." So he went into some meditation. He said, "Just go in the next room." And they went in the next room, and there it was, you know, some beautiful ripe mangoes with the leaves still connected, you know, with a little bit of, you know, drops of water on it, just sitting there. So pretty impressive that someone is able to do that, to walk across water. There's Mahima City, where someone could become, you know, larger than the largest. And, of course, when Trinavarta was trying to carry away Krishna exhibited that mystic power by just becoming so heavy, you know, down to the ground, sinful Trinavarta. We all know that song, you know, a lot of us do. So Trinavarta was destroyed. And also Hanuman, he just became bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, so he was easily able to just step across the ocean with this mystic city, Mahima City. Also, there's Vasita, where you can bring anyone under your control. It's actually a type of hypnotism. There's Kama Vasaita, where you can contradict nature to do the impossible. Once in Hawaii, we lived in Hawaii for 10 years, there was a yogi who came to the temple, and he was able to bend a steel bar with his eye. He bent it. But interestingly enough, this yogi would not enter the temple room. He would not go into the temple. Why do you think? Because? Something like that. You know, that he kind of knew, you know, that he was a bit of a cheater. Thank you for interrupting, Bruno Prabhu. It was totally the right time. I know, I'm cheating you. And then there's prakamya, to do anything. You can do anything you like. And Prabhupada gave the examples, you know, put, you know, water in your eye and then bring it out of your eye. So all these different cities that these yogis perfect. And why is it that they bother? Why is it that they bother? Yes, Prabhu. Name and fame. It's, Prabhupada said, it's all nonsense. It's all material desire for fame, for wealth, you know, recognition. Oftentimes, they become so powerful, they exploit people. Like, if you're that, you know, some of them will claim to be God. That's happened in the past, where, look what I can do. I can get a mango from nowhere. I can pull this out of nowhere. So they claim to be God, and people give them money, and they're able to gather a lot of wealth that way. But of course, compared to Yogeshwara, compared to Krishna, who's the supreme mystic, all of this pales in insignificance. And Prabhupada explains that the real mystic power, actually, there's a great verse, and I know many of you know it. I don't know it that well. Maybe somebody can repeat it, that wherever there's Krishna, there's... Okay, and the translation is... Most of our mystics. There's opulence. Yeah, so Srila Prabhupada makes the point that just like if there's a man with his son, and the man is a millionaire, and the son wants something very, very badly, and he doesn't have to worry about where to get it. You know, he knows that his father is perfectly capable of purchasing whatever he needs. So it's very significant that when one is practicing bhakti yoga, as he practices and becomes more and more advanced, that these different kinds of mystic powers, they actually follow the devotee. Prabhupada gives the example of a mango, that a bhakta is like an unripe mango. So the mango is a little pungent. You know, you're performing your sadhana, you know, your regulation, coming to Mangalartik, you might not always want to get up in the morning, but you're still doing it faithfully. You're chanting your runs, you know, you're worshiping the Supreme Lord. He says, and you do the same activities as you become more advanced, but the difference is that ripe mango is so relishable, it's so delicious, it's so pleasurable. So that's what the bhakta has to look forward to as he advances in devotional service, that he will be able to really relish Krishna consciousness. So that is our position in practicing sadhana bhakti, is that at some point, and already we're experiencing how pleasurable Krishna consciousness is. And there's so many examples in the scriptures of great devotees who have attained, you know, pure devotional service. One of them that comes to my mind is Kolaveshu Sridhar, who would sit on the bank of the Ganges, and he made his living from making little cups out of plantain leaves. So you can imagine, you probably don't get a lot of money from that kind of position. But however much money he got from that, he spent 50% on worshiping the deity, worshiping the Ganga, and the rest he used for his own maintenance. Lord Chaitanya was very, very pleased with Kolaveshu Sridhar, and he revealed himself to Kolaveshu Sridhar, and he said to him, I'm ready to give you any benediction, whatever you want, I will give you. But what did Kolaveshu Sridhar want? He didn't want anything. All he wanted was to remember Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet. So this is the position of a advanced devotee. You know, we see it in so many devotees. We see it amongst each other, and we've experienced it ourselves to some extent. Prabhupada gives an example of Gurudas. And Gurudas's father was the owner of a big liquor business, and he offered to give it to Gurudas, but Gurudas refused. Prabhupada said he swam over the ocean of liquor and remained in devotional service. So Krishna tests us in so many ways. Also, I believe it was Giriraj Maharaj, whose parents offered him $1 million if he would just leave Krishna consciousness. But he refused. He didn't want it. Even as a new devotee, you know, even as a new devotee, we're not tempted by that. We can see that so many people have so much money, but just how they're very unhappy oftentimes with the money they have. Of course, if you're fortunate enough to be a devotee and get Lakshmi and you can use it in Krishna service, so much the better. But it's not like those things are comparable to Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada also gives the example of when there's lots of fog and you can't see anything. Like you said, it's very dangerous when there's fog. You know, two planes can crash into each other, and oftentimes they won't let planes fly when that happens. Or even with boats, you know, there's been big boat accidents when there's deep fog. So Prabhupada compares the fog to our own sinful activity, our own sinful reaction. But he says, as the sun rises, as the sun comes up, immediately the fog dissipates. And as we chant the holy name, that's like, compared to the sun rising, that also dissipates all of our sinful reaction. We're able to engage in pure devotional service. Pure devotional service is very rare. You know, it's very, very easy to attain. There are 6 symptoms of pure devotional service. Can someone give me one symptom, perhaps? Pardon? Which is? Okay, it's immediate relief to material suffering. So that's stupendous, because we've all had, I know I've had the experience where I come to the temple, or I, I come to address the deities and my mind is going a million miles an hour, you know, so much agitation about this, you know, something's really bothering me, there's this problem, there's that problem. But once you come into the temple, you start worshiping the deities, you start dressing the deities, you start cooking for the deities, you start reading Bhagavad Gita, immediately it starts to go away. You start to put things into perspective. The philosophy kicks in. Krishna's mercy kicks in. So pure devotional service is an immediate relief to material distress. So someone can say, yes, but that's pure devotional service. We're not all engaging in pure devotional service. But Srila Prabhupada says that all my devotees are pure devotees to the extent that they're following the principles. And Prabhupada defended his devotees as being pure devotees. He would show us off when he would go to India to his godbrothers and say, you know, they've given up everything. They've given up cinema. They've given up drugs. They've given up alcohol. They've given up everything for Krishna consciousness. So also, another symptom of pure devotional service is that it's the beginning of all auspiciousness. As soon as we begin devotional service, and that's why it's so important for us to try to engage other people. Jayananda was a great example of someone who was always trying to engage, you know, just people who stopped by. Or when he went to the market to get donations of fruit, in his mind, he wanted to do it not just to get the boga for the temple, and the temple needed it because the temple was quite poor in San Francisco, but also to help the people, to allow the people to be able to engage in Krishna consciousness, because it's the beginning of all auspiciousness. So just, you know, sometimes I'll meet someone at the Sunday feast, a new person, and, you know, I'll say, do you want to serve prasada with me? And they'll go, sure. And they have so much fun, and they'll even confide that, wow, that I don't know why, but that it was most fun I've had in a long time. It's because, you know, you're connected to Krishna because it is the beginning of all auspiciousness. It also automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. So when we're just like here we are, you know, we're getting beans ready to be cooked for Jamastami or for lunch today. People are frantically working on the outfits going to be offered, making arrangements for Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, and because of that, it kind of transforms our existence into it changes our world into the spiritual world. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about in one of his songs, he says, when I went to take the Charanamrita, my home turned into Goloka Vrindavan. So to the extent that we engage in spiritual activities is the extent that we're already entering the spiritual world. It's already happening. Already our material bodies and our subtle bodies are transferring into spiritual bodies. It's already happening. Every 7 years, the body completely changes. So many of us have been doing devotional service for so many years that have been purified by prasadam. So we're fortunate that we're regaining our spiritual bodies. Also, pure devotional service is rarely achieved. So it's rarely achieved, but with Srila Prabhupada's grace, it's easily achieved. Because Srila Prabhupada promised us, if we chant Hare Krishna, if we chant 16 rounds, we follow the four regular principles, that we will go back to Godhead after this lifetime. So there are definitely the naysayers who say, no, that can't happen. You have to do this, you have to do that, you have to do this, you have to do that. I actually had an experience of someone who was initiated by another spiritual master. And I was talking with this devotee, and she was saying that she revealed to her spiritual master that she, in this lifetime, that she hadn't followed the regular principles, any of them, until she became a devotee, and would she able to go back to Godhead? And her spiritual master told her no, that she wouldn't be able to, that she would have to take birth more times because of her, you know, her sinful activity. And I was like, but no. I said, no, that's not true, because Prabhupada said, you know, that if we just chant 16 rounds, we follow the four regular principles, we'll be able to go back to Godhead. And she said, but that's your spiritual master. that's what you get, but that isn't what I get. So I was stunned. I was overcome with gratitude, and we see the mercy that Prabhupada is able to give, not just to his direct disciples, but in disciplic succession. He's able to give that kind of mercy. So that's why it behooves us to really give it so much attention to every day. Just look at every day, how much devotional service can we do and how much reading we can do. I was so excited when I went to Houston this year. I got a chance to be in a seminar with Vaisheshika, and he was talking about the little club that he has that's called CHAD. Some of you may know that CHAD is a chapter a day of Bhagavad Gita. So both of my children are getting ready to, Pritza left a couple days ago to Atlanta to do her internship in Atlanta. And my son is also leaving soon to go back to California. So I was feeling really sad and kind of unconnected. So I got them together and I said, you know, when you're gone, I'm going to miss you so much, but I really want to be connected with you. So I was thinking, if we were all a part of the club, if we're all a part of CHAD, then we could feel connected. And that, what do you think? Do you want to belong to the club? And they're both like, yeah, sure, we'll be in the club. So we're all chanting at least, you know, a half a chapter a day, but, you know, ideally a chapter a day, and it gives us a chance to connect and remember Krishna. So I highly recommend that, you know, if you can get your kids to join or get other people to join. It's a little, but it's great. It's gigantic. Srila Prabhupada talks about pure devotional service and how the pure devotee, that he's able to see everything, the human being and the cat, the dog, the sage, everyone the same, because he's not seeing the outward dress. He's not seeing the material tabernacle. He's seeing the spirit soul. And because he's seeing that, there's a possibility for universal brotherhood. There's a possibility for being on the spiritual platform, for real love, for equality, for fraternity. Otherwise, Srila Prabhupada says, going to the United Nations and signing a resolution, it's all bogus propaganda. So this formula Srila Prabhupada has given us, it's the real peace formula. It's the solution to equality. There's always so much trouble with race relations, you know, so much prejudice. He also explains how important it is for us to be able to remember Krishna. He said, just like you're in a foreign country, let's say that you're American in India and you meet another American, you immediately have a bond. And you may go up to the American and say, oh, you know, where are you from? And how long are you here? And what are you going to be doing while you're here? Or same thing with an Indian. You might meet someone in America. Oh, you know, where are you living? What are you doing? What's your job? Srila Prabhupada said, just like that, we're all Vaishnavas. And we see a Vaishnava, we should be so excited, like, oh, here's the Vaishnava. So what are you reading? What are you learning? What's a realization that you've had? You know, share that. And that also makes that turns our atmosphere into a spiritual atmosphere. Brahmabhuta prasanatma nasoshati nakanchati samasaveshu bhuteshu mai bhakti labhate param. One who is transcendentally situated once realizes the supreme Brahman and becomes joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So this is what we're aspiring for. There are so many great personalities in the past who have attained the supreme goal. I thought for the last, you know, 5 or 6 minutes, maybe we can just talk about some of the great souls that we know from the scriptures, or even some of the great souls that we know right now that we can see have a higher taste. There's a devotee, her name is Carly, from Krishna House, and I was just talking to her on Balaram's appearance day. I hadn't seen her for a long time because she was out distributing books. So I said, Carly, can you just tell me like a story or two about your book distribution? She said, sure. So she told me one story where they went to a music festival. It's like a four-day music festival, her and a few other girls. And they people camp out for 4 days, so they kind of divided the rows, so they each have their rows, and in their own time they can just go down distributing books. So she said she came to one group, and there was a young man there that had a Bhagavad Gita. It was a penguin Bhagavad Gita, and it was completely worn, you know, like he had read it so many times and had gained some higher knowledge from it. But when Carly started to talk to him and his friends, he became so excited. She told him about offering food. So they were like, well, can you do that with us right now? She says, well, what do you have to offer? Well, they had some water and they had some fruit. So they all sat down in a circle. They all held hands. Carly said the prayers for offering prasadam. And they all learned how to offer prasadam. They all learned how to take prasadam. They all learned the Maha Mantra. So unbelievable. And she was especially appreciating how, like she said once, you kind of get into samadhi when you're doing prasadam, when you're distributing books, and when you go to even take prasadam, a drink of water, you're feeling a little bit guilty sometimes because you're taking time away from distributing books. So she was feeling that way. She went to take prasadam, and she was thinking, oh, I should really just be out there distributing books. But then when she was done, she started walking, and someone remembered her from another place she'd been and said, hey, Carly. And they said, do you have any other books? He bought two books from another event. And she said, yeah. So she thought, wow, if I hadn't stopped and take prasadam, then I wouldn't have met him. The timing was perfect. And he went back and took one of every book she had. So he walked away with a sack full of books. So, oh, another thing that Prabhupada said that was so funny to me is that he said, you know, like the mystic cities, that people are so impressed with magic. If you go to a magic show, you know, there's these David Copperfield and these other very famous magicians. And it was like, whoa, you know, and Prabhupada said, it's such simple magic. He goes, and there's the magic of the universe going on all the time. And they don't pay any attention to that. They don't care about that. They're captivated by the simple magic. So as devotees connected to Yogeshwara, connected to the Supreme Mystic, we have the opportunity to witness magic, and we also have the opportunity to be involved in the magic. So that means that we're willing to take some risks. We're able to go up to people and, you know, offer them a book or offer them some prasadam or preach to them. So let me just open it up. If anybody has a comment or a question, their own experience of how they've, you know, they've witnessed this magic, then they can volunteer. Yes. Okay.
That you met a devotee, you didn't say well, but who said you are displaying or explaining her about the mercy of Prabhupada, that how in one life you can be ready to enter in the spiritual world. But then she mentioned to her guru that before she joined Krishna consciousness, she was not following all those rules, regulations, or four regulatory principles. So she has to take part a few more.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, how do we understand when one lecture Prabhupada says, everything we are speaking is actually from Shastra. One should not speak anything that is not recorded in Shastra. So sometimes when I have a problem, I see that actually it is somewhere in Shastra, everything Prabhupada says. Mm-hmm. So how do I understand when we see Mahaprabhu deliver Chandkaji, who was eating meat, Patan Muslim, their beef eater, but they became liberated. Even Bhaktisiddhanta Babaji, Dhruva Maharaj Prabhu giving class a couple of weeks back, Bhaktisiddhanta Babaji knew how many flavor of fish, because he was born in a fisher family, his father was, and then he became Mahabhagavat after accepting Krishna consciousness. So as soon anybody accept Krishna consciousness and follow purgative principle, immediately liberated, delivered in a sense.
It's true. Prabhupada says that. He said that we're not really interested in, we're not worried about liberation, because as soon as you become a bhakti, you're automatically liberated. And that everything follows the devotee, you know, economic development and, you know, liberation, all those things just come along.
So even if somebody says something that you have to take few more parts, but there has to be some shastra backup that opinion. Because I don't see, I don't want to confirm.
I mean, I just took it as Prabhupada's special mercy that he was able to, you know, give us that kind of a benediction. And, you know, I mean, in one sense, few verses isn't that long, but Srila Prabhupada, he gave us the formula, so I think anybody that follows the formula is able to connect with that mercy. But it's relating the story. Yes, we're in the room.
Thank you for encouraging me to attend class. and I didn't interrupt you. You're mentioning about Jayananda. It just reminded me of about 20 or 25 years ago, I was selling incense in California. So we were in San Mateo, which is like a suburb of San Francisco, and I was with another devotee. So we went to this head shop, and so we had some sweets with us, and we said we're selling incense. And the guys, there was two men who owned the store. They were in their 50s at this time, and they looked at us. I said, "We're Krishnas, you know." And he said, "No, you're not." He said, "You're not Krishnas." then I said, "What do you mean you're not Krishnas?" He said, "Well, let me clarify that. You're not like the Krishna we knew, who used to come with garlands and fruits and and the sweets and all. You're nothing like him." And we just put our head down and, you know, and just accepted, you know. We knew who he was talking
about. That's a really nice story. Yes, sir.
We're talking about devotees that have a taste. I want to glorify a devotee. San Francisco. Oh, I like this from San Francisco. He's up north. Sukadev. I would go to the San Francisco Rock Theater back in the early 70s, and Sukadev would begin chanting, and he would not stop for hours. And there would be hordes of San Franciscans dressed up in different costumes and stuff, and pretty soon everybody would be arm in arm dancing and chanting to Sukadev. And Sukadev, he just wouldn't stop. He went on hours and hours and hours.
Wow.
So he had a taste.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, we all have a taste, because here we are, right? Here we are. And we pray that we can continue, because it's such a valuable gift, we never want to give that up.
Hello. Hi, Paul. I was just thinking about having a taste when you go out on Sankirtan. Everybody who's done it will know that you sort of get totally oblivious to your surroundings and what's going on. You just are focused on your service. So I just wanted to say that the most craziest situation I distributed in was inside a bathroom at a rock concert in a big stadium, and we distributed in the bathroom at the urinals.
Oh my God.
Why did we do that, you ask? Because where are they going to go? They couldn't run away. They were stuck.
And probably couldn't get caught so easily. Also.
And they actually were giving us donations to get rid of us. So it really worked. But when you think back about it, you know, a little bit past the time and think back, I did that. Yeah.
I work outside the bathrooms. Whenever you go to a big, whatever it is, whether it's a concert or a ball game, everybody has to go to the bathroom. And they usually have lines of the porta potties. So I work, I don't work in there, but I work really near there, because they have to come there. Interesting. That's interesting. But yesterday I was at a stop sign, and there was one of those people there, you know, at the sign, you know, that says homeless help, blah, blah, and she was a young girl. I always do this. I roll down my window, and it gets their attention, and then I look around like I'm looking for money, and then they come over to the car, and I go, I can't find any money, but here, I got this, and I give her a book. So I gave this girl, happened to be a chant and be happy, and she grabbed it and went, oh, thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and she just chanted the mantra. Wow. Some street urchin. You know. Yeah. She was young, maybe 20 or less, but as soon as she saw Prabhupada in the book, she just started chanting the mantra. That's what happens.
Yeah, and Prabhupada, he makes the point in so many places, too, that once he was taught, I just heard this on the tape with Bhavananda, where Prabhupada said, we want to do this, and we want to do that, you know, place plans for Mayapur. And Bhavananda said, but Prabhupada, you know, how are we going to get the money? He goes, why are you always worried about money? And when Garga Muni came in, Garga Muni, Prabhupada says, Garga Muni Prabhu, I want you, whenever Bhavananda needs money, give it to him, because he's so worried about money. He said, so whatever he needs, you give him. And all throughout, you know, as I was preparing for the class in so many places, Prabhupada says, you know, don't worry about money, just continue on with your service and it will come. It will come. That Krishna will take care. So it's a matter of faith, but we have some personal experience, you know, many of us were just living in the temple for so many years and somehow or other we're still being made, Krishna's still maintaining us somehow or other. All right. Anybody else? Yes, Raghavan. Let me get rid of.
The other day I was in Gainesville on the way to the Harinam. I had to stop the shop for something. And then I saw at Big Lots there were two big fire engines, mm-hmm. and with flashing lights parked right in front of the entrance. So I just thought, I'm going to go in there and see. You know, if somebody's almost dying or what, I'm going to chant Hare Krishna for them, you know. So I went in, and they had all their equipment in there and a roll bed that was, you know, on wheels. And all I could get to was I could see this young girl. She was very attentive to what was going on with this old man who just fell over. Mm-hmm. And I says, how is he? What happened? Or whatever. And then she started telling me, and I said, do you go to UF? And she said, yeah, I'm just starting this year. My mother has brought me here from Miami. And so I started talking to her, and she said, and you're a Hare Krishna? She said, I could tell. I just feel so peaceful around Hare Krishna people. And so I had a book with me, and I gave her a book, but then as I was talking, then I met her mother, and her mother was equally as open and pious, and so then I went outside, because they were still finishing their shopping, I went outside to my car and brought in Bhagavad Gita and a science of self-realization and a higher taste, and presented it to them, and the mother immediately, I says, we asked for some donation so that you can get more realization while you're reading this, you know. And she said, so she just opened her wallet and gave $20. Mm. So I don't know that I would have seen them at all. I wasn't even going there, but that, you know, the flashing lights took me there.
Nice. And it's interesting now that, like you said, you know, the girl and her mother was so favorable. At the Sunday feast, some of you might know Emily and Arturo. They're kind of new devotees. And so Emily told me that Arthur's mother was here, so I put them in front of the line, and I was talking to him, coming to find out that they weren't bringing their mother to Krishna consciousness. The mother actually, and she wasn't that old, she brought them to Krishna consciousness. So I was thinking, as time goes on, we're going to see that more and more, because, you know, the population is changing. Like, our age, So many people have been exposed to Krishna consciousness, heard chanting, had prasadam, so it's just going to exponentially increase. So it's a wave. It's a wave, and we're on it, and it's very exciting. Verna? Okay.
Recently, I was traveling on my own. I was in Omaha, Nebraska, and I had a long day, and I pulled in the parking lot of the hotel where I was staying, and this guy came up to me. He was probably in his 40s. He said, "Are you from Florida?" He looked at the plates of the vehicle, and I said, "Yep." He said, "Where in Florida?" I said, "Gainesville." He said, "Oh, I went to UF." So then, and I was so tired, and I didn't want to talk to anyone. But he wanted to talk to me. So it's like, I'm usually a good talker, but I really didn't want to talk to him. So, but I said, "No, I'm from Gainesville." Then I said, "Oh, I shouldn't be like this." So I said, "Did you have Krishna lunch when you went to UF?" And then he just totally turned. He says, "Did I have Krishna lunch? Krishna lunch saved my life for 3 years. Every day I had Krishna lunch. And I can still remember it." Then he says, "Are you with the Krishna devotees?" I said, "Yes." So he says, "Thank you. I love you all."
Oh, wow.
And that was like all my tiredness went away.
It would have That's significant. And that's what Prabhupada said. At first, they will laugh at you. And there's plenty of that. And then they'll hate you. But they'll love you. And they really realize what we're giving. Then people will... And we're, you know, and